That's right. We have our Congressman Jeff Duncan on the line with us here this morning. How you doing, Jeff?
And I'm doing great. Merry Christmas to everyone.
Oh, that's right. Merry Christmas it is. It'll be here before we know it. What is it, 15 days away or something? Oh, my God.
Something like that, yeah.
Well, we have. I don't know whether you've heard this or not, but we have some exciting news here at Sharp Facets Gallery. We're actually, this is our last Christmas at Sharp Facets on the bypass, 1220. Next year, we're going to be totally online, and we're moving across the street to WCRS Studios over there.
Well, that was an awesome run for that business, and we hate to see you closing up, but know that you're still out there.
Absolutely.
Online.
Yeah. If you would have told me, Jeff, that we could sell the things that we are able to sell online, I would have said no way. But, boy, have times changed.
Yeah, they really have. You know, the online platform, social media, I see you selling things on Facebook. We use social media, Facebook, Twitter. It's an incredible tool, great outreach for constituents, and I think it's a great tool for merchants like yourself.
Absolutely. Well, you know, talk about changes. I saw on Facebook that you're going to move into Joe Wilson's old office. Boy, are you, what a change that's going to be, number one, but two, to be able to change over all the walls. Are you painting and spackling and doing all this kind of stuff?
Well, first off, I had to move. I love the Cannon office building where I have been since I got elected, but they are renovating that building. It's the oldest building on Capitol Hill other than the Capitol itself, the oldest office building, I should say. And so we were forced to move. And to get Joe Wilson's office was a good thing because a lot of folks from South Carolina already know where that office is. But if you've ever been there, and I know you have,
right,
and pictures I put on Facebook, oh, my gosh. He had every inch of the wall covered with some sort of picture, certificate. He even had his kindergarten graduation certificate framed and hung on the wall. And so when they start pulling those nails out of that old plaster, I can only imagine the loss of integrity of the walls. So, yeah, they're going to spack on paint, and we'll get moved in before the first of the year.
Oh, I just was thinking about that. You know, the last time I was there, I looked around, and we said, God, Joe, if you ever move, and here he is moving. So, anyways, that's a great office. I know you're going to enjoy it there.
Well, I hope so. It's Rayburn Office Building, so the office is, The total suite is bigger. My office is probably going to be about the same size, but my staff gets more room. And if you've ever been in the legislative shop of a congressional office, they're stacked on top of each other. Just the amount of paper and books, reference materials, and computers and things that a staff of eight people use. So we're looking forward to the staff having a little more room and a little more room for when constituents come up to seat comfortably, either in my office or in our lobby area where we have a conference table, to seat comfortably and have a conversation with either me or my staff about issues that are important.
Absolutely. Well, you know, there's a lot of changes happening up there in Washington, D.C. I would be curious to know, what is the feeling on the Hill now as you're talking with other congressmen, senators, and everything? What's the atmosphere?
It's cautiously optimistic in a lot of ways. There's an excitement in there for Republicans. You know, there's a lot to do, and there's a lot of challenges with regard to repeal and replace Obamacare, how it was implemented, how it was even passed in the first place by a Democrat Congress using a budget reconciliation mechanism so they could get over the 60-vote threshold in the Senate. We're going to have to do the same thing to repeal it. We're going to have to use a budget reconciliation bill that we criticize the Democrats for. But if we want to repeal and replace, which I think America wants us to do, hence the election results, then we're going to have to use that same tactic. And then as we move forward with Obamacare, repeal and replace with this own challenge, we hope to do some tax reform. We hope to do regulatory reform. We hope to unleash and unbridle the innovative and entrepreneurial spirit that Americans have to help Americans create jobs. But we're still going to have this 60-vote threshold in the Senate to try to overcome. They have to have 60 votes in order to have a motion to proceed, to actually get on a vote for the bill. Sometimes you hear it called cloture. And the Democrats in the past have been willing to change the rules to a simple majority in order to get some things done. You heard it called the nuclear option in the past. And I've found a phrase that I've found myself saying more and more, Ann, is that the Democrats are willing to change the Senate rules in order to destroy America. Why won't Republicans change the rules in order to save America and get back to a simple majority?
Yeah, I agree with you there. I you know, couldn't have any argument with that, absolutely. But one of my questions about this repeal and replace, this isn't going to be just today we have Obamacare, tomorrow we don't. Am I correct on that?
Well, there's no way we could do that. I mean, I guess we could, but it would shock the marketplace so much. You can't just turn the switch off. I mean, Obamacare was phased in over a period of about 4 or 5 years. We're not going to take that long to phase it out. But there are good reasons for having a phase out so that you don't shock the marketplace, that Americans will understand that they will have to shop for insurance just like they shop for cars. They'll have to go find the retailer. They have to make good decisions for their family. Nothing will be crammed down their throats. Hospitals, doctors will all have to make adjustments on how they're going to be reimbursed and negotiate with the insurance companies for reimbursement. We're going to have to deal with some Medicare and Medicaid issues on their control of the hospitals and payment plans and how the hospitals are and doctors are reimbursed for the services they provide, because Obamacare did not just create individual health care insurance options for individuals. It also pushed down a lot of mandates and regulations and requirements on the hospitals and doctors themselves that really need to be looked at and changed and repealed as well. I think we need to get the government out of health care. We need to get the government out from between you as an individual and your doctor and making your health care decisions. You shouldn't have to worry about how much money you're going to have to come out of pocket. You should know that up front, that my plan has a X number dollar deductible, X number of dollar out-of-pocket max for me and my family, and there shouldn't be any hidden charges. What Obamacare did, Ann, as you know, it was a true redistribution of wealth. It took money from people that had the ability to pay for their insurance and used that increase, because we all saw our premiums go up, which was contrary to what the president said, that your premiums wouldn't go up and that you could keep your doctor if you like it, you could keep your health insurance if you like it. That was a lie, a total lie to defraud the American people. But they took those increases on premiums and used that increase, that money, to pay for the health insurance for those that didn't have the ability to pay. It was redistribution. So there's a lot of things that we have to do. There's a lot of people that are smarter than I am that are working on this, like Dr. Tom Price, who is the new Secretary of Health and Human Services that runs the health care and Medicare aspects of government. And they're working on it. We had a meeting this week with Blue Cross Blue Shield from South Carolina that working with our delegation and also working with Dr. Price and others to try to craft more free market solutions and a workable solution for the replacement plan.
Just out of curiosity, how does Blue Cross Blue Shield feel about the fact that this could be repealed? Are they good with this? How do they feel?
I think it's a reality for them that it's coming. And Blue Cross Blue Shield lost a lot of money. In fact, they lost so much money in Tennessee, they pulled out of Tennessee. And when they pulled out of Tennessee, it changed my plan. I buy on the D.C. marketplace under Obamacare. I'm forced to buy online with a D.C. marketplace. And so I got notice that because I had a multi-state plan with Blue Cross Blue Shield called Care First, that my plan was changing. Because Blue Cross Blue Shield pulled out of Tennessee, then I had to go back in and shop for a different plan for me and my family for the coming year. And I didn't have anybody to talk to. I had to go online and look in a book that they sent and try to come up with what's a comparable plan to what I'm losing, what's my out-of-pocket max, what is the deductible every year, are my doctors in this group, and try to figure all that out for myself. I didn't have an insurance salesman or broker that I could sit down with, and we could craft a plan that was best for me and my family. I had to try to figure all that out. If every American's having to do what I had to do, they're frustrated. They wonder whether they've got the right or correct insurance for them and their family, and they're also concerned about the cost that they're facing, not only for their premiums, but if something happens and they have to use the hospital, what their out-of-pocket max is. So I think Blue Cross Blue Shield would rather have the ability as capitalist, free market capitalists, to create plans to meet a broad spectrum of the American population, sell those plans at a profitable rate versus the government telling them what they can charge, what they have to charge, and what they have to cover. So the free market will work here if we will just let it.
And, of course, you know, a big concern, though, I have heard that President-elect Trump has said that there are certain aspects of the Obamacare they want to keep, staying kids being able to stay on their kids' program, on their parents' program, and also the fact of pre-existing conditions. So,
well, we'll see what he thinks. I'm not privy to what they think there is in Obamacare that we would want to keep. What I'm doing is waiting for Dr. Price and House Republicans to lay a plan out there that replaces Obamacare and let me look at it and see if it's something I can support and go from there. So until we have a plan to look at, and there was a plan in the last Congress that Dr. Price put out there that was a repeal and replacement plan that I think is the benchmark, but now we have a president in the White House who's going to have a say-so in this as well, and they may have some different opinions. And so hopefully the Republicans can all get on the same page and we can move this rather rapidly in the first 100 days of the administration.
Absolutely. So what do you think about the cabinet picks that Donald Trump, President-elect Donald Trump, has been working on?
Look, I'm very pleased with him. I'm a little bit concerned that he hadn't picked the Secretary of State yet, but maybe he hadn't found the right candidate, and I hope that's a good sign that he's really screening and trying to pick one of the most important cabinet positions. But when you go down the list, Secretary of Education is someone who believes in more free market, individual parental choice, charter schools, alternative ways of doing public education in this country. And I think that will really instill some new lifeblood in the education arena. And if you look at Department of Homeland Security, I was hoping that Michael McCaul, a former colleague, a colleague of mine from Texas, not former, but a colleague of mine from Texas, who chairs the Homeland Security Committee with me, I was hoping he was going to be chosen. But when Donald Trump chose General Kelly, I was very excited about that. I've worked with General Kelly. He was a retired Marine general whose last command was at the Southern Command. So I dealt with him and worked with him on a lot of aspects with regard to the Western Hemisphere, and had a lot of conversations with him. So he's somebody that I highly respect and will do a great job, who has the right focus, the understanding that the radical Islamic Jihad is a huge threat, the ISIS is a huge threat, that our porous southern border is the soft underbelly of our nation that can be exploited by Al-Qaeda and ISIS and Iran and Hezbollah and other bad elements. He understands interior enforcement of the existing laws that are on the books with regard to immigration and immigration and customs enforcement. So I'm excited about that. Of course, we mentioned Dr. Tom Price from Georgia a little bit earlier, Secretary of Health and Human Services, and what a great choice. This is a doctor, an orthopedic surgeon, who fully grasps the impacts of Obamacare on the health care arena, whether it's hospitals or doctors themselves. So I think he's going to be a great one. And then the idea that Mick Mulvaney is being considered for the Office of Management and Budget at the White House, I don't believe Donald Trump can find a better choice than Mick Mulvaney, who fully understands budgeting and numbers and would be a great choice. Of course, Nikki Haley at the UN as ambassador to the UN is a great choice, gets another South Carolinian in the administration. So when you go through all of the cabinet picks, Department of Energy and the pick yesterday with the EPA, Secretary of the EPA, the Attorney General from Oklahoma, who has sued the EPA and understands the egregious behavior of the EPA and wants to get that agency out of the lives of Americans and American businesses, I think it's going to be a great thing, and I think it's got the entrenched bureaucrats scared to death about what's going to happen. So all in all, I'm excited about what the president-elect has done so far, Ann.
Yeah, I think it looks good. But, you know, one of the things I wanted to ask you, you know, you've been down on our southern border. You know how porous it is. Donald Trump has said that he is going to build a wall. What is the buzz in Washington, D.C.? Does anybody believe that there'll be a wall built?
Absolutely. And so Donald Trump, when he was on the campaign trail, talked about a wall. I think he's come to the reality that it's not all going to be a big wall barrier, that more fencing, more vehicle barriers, more wall in places, but a multi-layer approach to border security that includes more wall-type structures as impediments to illegals and bad elements coming across our border. So I look forward to working with him, because one thing I know is that we can act immediately on helping him achieve that goal by just funding the 2006 Secure Fence Act, which is law of the land that the government was going to build more fencing along the southern border. That passed in 06. But then when Democrats took over the control of Congress, they failed to appropriate the dollars. So even though it's the law of the land to build more fencing down there, it hadn't been appropriated. So one thing we can do starting in January is appropriate money immediately to start complying with the 2006 Secure Fence Act and get more fencing built. And then we can look at areas of the border that need more fencing, or where Donald Trump expects a wall to be, and figure out how we're going to do that, appropriate the dollars for that, and secure our southern border, secure our country. It's the first and foremost thing that we should focus on from a national security aspect, is securing our southern border.
Well, and, you know, as part of the Homeland Security, Jeff, where are we at with ISIS? Do you think we're going to end up in a full-blown war over there? What do you think?
Well, now we've got a very strong commander-in-chief coming in, somebody that's had strong rhetoric on the campaign trail. We'll see if his actions match his words. But I hope that the enemies of freedom, Western democracies and Western civilization, I hope they are getting a clear understanding from the Trump administration, or Trump-elect administration, that we're not going to take any mess off of them. I hope that he tells Iran, for instance, that we're going to respect international waters, and we're also going to respect the and expect you to respect the international norm that our carrier battle fleet has an exclusion zone around it. And if you enter that exclusion zone, we're going to take it as a threat, and we're going to blow whatever that threat is out of the water. There's not going to be a warning shot across the bow. We're giving you that warning shot right now. And if you do violate our exclusion zone, there will be loss of Iranian lives, and there will be loss of Iranian naval vessels, because they'll be at the bottom of the Persian Gulf. So stay away. And that clear language is what worked for Ronald Reagan in the Cold War, and that clear language will work with the Persians as well, because that's really all they understand, is very direct, clear language. And that goes for ISIS as well. It's time to get out of Mosul. It's time to quit with this charade of a caliphate and Sharia law and targeting Christians and what you're doing in Iraq and Syria. We're going to work with our allies, and we're going to put a stop to it. That's how you defeat terrorism. I don't know about a full-blown war. I don't think we're going to do that. But President-elect Trump is inheriting a lot of flashpoints around the globe, and whether it's China's incursion into the Spratly Islands in the South China Sea off in historical Philippine property, territorial waters, or whether it's off the coast of Yemen with Iran and the Houthi rebels and terrorists there in Yemen, or whether it's what's going on in Iraq and Syria, whether it's Iran and what they've done with our Navy, what they've done with our naval sailors, what they do to support terrorism around the globe. And then you've got, of course, Russia and Ukraine and the Crimea. So there's a lot of flashpoints around the globe that he's inheriting, because we've had a very, very weak commander-in-chief. These things have popped up.
Absolutely. And, of course, Mad Dog Mattis there at the helm. That should be an interesting combination. I know a lot of people were always afraid of Donald Trump having the nuclear codes. Do you have any fear?
No, I don't. I mean, you know, this is a smart businessman. He doesn't make, you know, he's had a lot of loose rhetoric on the campaign trail. Okay?
And that, I
think that's what's got people concerned. But, you know, he's a shrewd businessman. He's very calculated and methodical. You look at how he's picking his cabinet. He's got General Mattis over at the Pentagon. going back to what I said about having a strong commander-in-chief and the right people in place for the military, what a great choice in General Mattis. But I'm not worried about nuclear launch codes and somebody having their finger on the button. That's just not something that's in my mind. I'm concerned about somebody that will look our enemies, so to speak, our adversaries, if you want to use the word, look them in the eye and say, no more, this is going to stop. You're not going to harass our Navy. You're not going to take our Navy sailors and humiliate them like we saw. If you do, there will be repercussions. And back up his words with action. Because I really, truly believe that there are people in the world that's the only type of rhetoric that they understand.
You know, one last question I'd like to ask you about, and I know that this is not your specialty here, but Social Security is on the mind of so many of our senior citizens and, of course, the Medicare aspect. What can you say to them about where we're headed with Social Security?
Well, we all know that after Lyndon Johnson, the Democrats took the Social Security Trust Fund money in the late 60s and spent that money elsewhere, that Social Security became a Ponzi scheme at that point, where they were hoping future workers would have enough money and paying in Social Security to pay the benefits of today. That's not the case, because we're having to dip into the general fund to pay the shortfall in Social Security benefits. But if you're a senior and you're drawing Social Security, you don't have anything to worry about. I do think we probably need to look at cost of living adjustments and things, because costs are going up, and there's a lot of different factors for costs going up, and you're not seeing adjustments for inflation and that sort of thing. But they don't have to worry about their benefits diminishing or going away. Now, I would say to people that are my age, I'm 50 years old or younger, that changes to Social Security are going to happen in order for it to be solvent. And if you're my age or younger, you may have to wait a little bit longer to receive Social Security benefits, because the actuarial tables on your life expectancy and how long you were supposed to draw Social Security, expected to draw Social Security, were set back in the 30s, and people are just living longer. And so that means they're drawing more money out than was ever expected under those actuarial tables. And so those tables need to be changed, the calculations that this is how much you pay in, this is the date you start collecting and when you're supposed to die based on their tables. That needs to change, because humans are changing. Right. You know, we're living longer. And so it just makes common sense that we need to go back and look at that in order to make Social Security solvent. But I go back to what I said earlier. If you're a senior today and you're drawing Social Security and Medicare, the only change you should expect is a some sort of cost of living adjustment that I think Congress is going to have to do, because you know, costs are going up. We all see it at the grocery store. We all see it at just the price of a vehicle nowadays. It's more than I paid for my first house.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
Things are more expensive, and I think Social Security is going to have to reflect that. That's the only change they should expect.
Absolutely. Well, it's really nice of you to call us this morning and give us an update. I know you're enthusiastic for next year, cautiously enthusiastic, I guess we should say.
Right.
And
I am, and we're going to have a robust agenda in the first 100 days. I think Donald Trump is going to expect that. I think the American people expect that. There's a lot of work for Republicans on tax reform and repatriation of overseas earnings and how we tax those money coming back. But what a shot in the arm that our economy will have from overseas earnings coming back and being invested in infrastructure, the physical plant, furniture, fixtures, and equipment for businesses, job creation, and then the tax revenues at a common sense tax rate on that overseas earnings will be added revenue to the government that can be used to pay for national infrastructure that Donald Trump, President-elect Trump, talks about. So there's a lot of good things on the horizon. I still go back to, I hope America doesn't get that frustrated, but the United States Senate, with their 60-vote threshold on normal legislation, is still an impediment out there. And as long as that's in place, Chuck Schumer is going to drive the train, so to speak, in a lot of ways, and we've got to figure out a way to overcome that as Republicans.
Absolutely. You're listening to WCRS. Congressman Jeff Duncan, I wish you a very happy, happy Christmas, and I'm planning a trip up there to Washington, D.C., hopefully before President-elect Trump gets elected, so I can check out things. I hope I'll get to see you then.
Well, you can come see my office, and hopefully you'll be ready by then. And I do appreciate it. Merry Christmas again to you and all of your listeners. God bless you, and let's remember the reason for the season is Jesus Christ's birth. And thanks so much. I look forward to coming back on.
All right. Thank you so much. Congressman Jeff Duncan, bye-bye.